Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
What is that? That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
The second captain's
world service.
That's... Yeah. They have asked for that, really.
Well, you can laugh. It was the World Cup.
I'm a little bit of an idealist, but having said that, I want to be like me.
You don't know what you're talking about.
What did you know?
I'd like to stay alive for 6 days.
I'm going to leave it there.
I'd say it to your face, not say it to you now.
I'm down to Anfield and we'll see them, won't we?
What you doing down here, you shawnee man?
A three-way battle to avoid relegation on the final day of the season, and it had all the elements we've come to expect from such occasions, right down to the actual transistor radio that one old-school Leicester supporter had glued to his ear at the King Power Stadium.
Unbelievable.
Relaying all the bad news coming his way from Goodison Park. No fancy iPhones for this gentleman. He backed himself to get the most accurate information in the most time-honoured English football
Communication fashion. Hipster.
Welcome to Monday's Second Captain's Football Podcast. Hey, Ken.
Owen, how are you?
Hey, Murph, how are you?
Hey, Owen, how's it going?
Transistor radios. Well, obviously you saw it. I mean, it was picked out by the TV cameras and then repeatedly shown because they knew, the people in charge of the TV footage knew what we were seeing there. What we were seeing was a piece of history repeated in front of ourselves. So there's the transistor radios, match of the day, showing all three games together, weaving in and out. The crying fans, the jubilant fans, angry fans in the case of Leeds. It was all there for us. There was a markedly different fan reaction, actually, in Elland Road compared to at Leicester, where the Leicester fans, I sort of felt like we're applauding the players for winning the Premier League. I know this is a long time ago, but we haven't forgotten that you did actually win the Premier League.
A couple of you did.
Yeah.
Most of you did not win the Premier League.
Yeah.
Most of these guys were not around.
Many have moved on.
Jamie Vardy
was there.
They
were thanking Jamie Vardy, basically.
Daniel Amarante was there.
That's what that was about.
Mark Albrighton is
at
out.
At Leeds, it was fury, though. It was fury. We'll get into this in your report in Sport in a sec. Just to mention that Raphael Honigstein is on the show today. After a dramatic final day in Germany, to say the least, where Bayern snatched the title from Dortmund's grasp in the final moments of the season. Dortmund only managing to draw their final game. Bayern stealing in with a late winner. And it's next up, Wembley, in this never-ending football season. Our World Service members will be treated to another football pod later on in the week. You have to sign up on secondcaptains.com for just €5 a month plus VAT if you want to become a member.
Well, Owen... were you happy with the way that it worked out? Are you glad that Everton are still there? That Leicester have been expunged?
I do watch a lot of sport through the prism of my work, Ken, I have to say. And in this particular case, I was projecting ahead to next season on Premier Sports.
Oh, yeah.
A season without Leeds and without Everton would have been a bit of a tough sell in a lot of ways. They're big clubs. You know when you're doing games involving both of those clubs that people care about them.
Well, you'd have Luton this time. Have you seen
this? Luton are coming up. That was going to happen regardless. What I'm saying is at halftime it looked as though Leeds and Everton were both going down and I was thinking there could be some... No disrespect to your Luton's, your Burnley's.
Have you seen that Luton have a very quirky stadium though?
Oh yeah.
I have seen the entrance to Luton Town AFC.
Was it
their own... club Twitter account that tweeted it, but it was literally like a row of what it really reminded me was of Richmond Park in Inchicore. It looks exactly like the entrance to
your
Richmond
local
Park
ground.
Well, listen,
the entrance you walked through ground. Once maybe Brano
that's,
like that
that's literally Brano
really
laughing
that. That's
in the
Brano's
background
best don't ever reaction give, to anything. I didn't think it was much of a comment by me, but Brano loved
don't
it
don't give him a laugh for that. He doesn't deserve it.
Yeah, well, I thought that I, you know, if I'm honest, I would have liked to see Leeds survive. But that was clearly never going to happen.
Why did you want Leeds to stay?
Big Sam.
I just have a...
Was it Big Sam? Is that the reason why?
No, actually, not really. Because, I mean, he obviously, Leeds were the Leeds... It's hard to say which was the least deserving side of survival.
They should have been four relegated.
There should have been.
This year.
They should have made an extra space.
Every couple of years, you should be allowed to just produce a card and just say, listen, you're all shit.
At half time on the final day.
Yeah, exactly. There's like an independent board of adjudicators. So have any of you done enough to survive?
You've
done so much to be relegated.
Even felt the Leicester, the Everton supporters... The pitch invasion was a bit half-hearted in comparison to last year.
Well, pitch invasion got booed by the vast majority of the stadium.
The whole thing was just
that's happened a couple of times now, you know.
I felt they were a bit grimmed out themselves by having to do it this way again.
Yeah.
Does it wear off the joy of getting away with it? I'm not sure it does, actually.
I mean, throughout the game, it was, you know, they were doing they were behaving exactly as extremely frantic football fans. As you would expect them to be behaving,
yeah.
But it was literally just at the final whistle where all of the Everton fans simultaneously decided, "Thank Christ, we're still alive here." But that was shit.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think the difference also you have to remember last season when they stayed up against Crystal Palace, they were 2-0 down in that game with about half an hour left to go, and so it was over, and then they won 3-2. So that was kind of a.
They also had Frank Lampard in amongst them. If Sean Dyche had jumped up and practically danced on the roof like Lampard was doing last year, in my memory, he was physically dancing on the roof. That's the way I've changed.
I mean, he was. It's evolved in my brain. He did mount the stand. I mean, it wasn't like the roof of the stand, but he did mount like a platform halfway up.
Whereas, did you see Dyche's reaction when the goal went in?
Yeah,
take a sip of water, stand there, look very Dyche-like, and hope that rubs off on the players.
Yeah, I think they and all they needed to do was beat Bournemouth, which they managed to do. You know, Bournemouth actually were kind of outplayed them, certainly in the first half, and then it's just that once they're losing, they're probably going to just accept that. Mm. You know, there was a shot that Pickford saved late. There was 10 minutes of injury time because Pickford had gone down to, he did end up getting booked. Yeah, Pickford did end up getting that booking, but it was worth it. And in the other game, okay, Leicester were playing West Ham, and you know, I mean, people have been saying this is the best team ever to get relegated, or you know, among the best teams. It's one of those, and it is a bit surprising that they did ultimately. They do have a lot of good players. This should not have happened, but it's difficult to have any sympathy for Leicester because of the complacency that has been there. That they kind of obviously. Just thought this, obviously that's not going to happen.
Yeah, the players themselves maybe felt they were too good to go down.
Well, absolutely. The players, the staff, the owner who, you know, I'm not sure I was through Vedana Prabha necessarily has the same interest in the club as his father did. Obviously his father very tragically died in a helicopter crash nearly 5 years ago. You know, and he was clearly, for him, it was a big thing to be the owner of Leicester, and for his son, I'm not sure that he's necessarily got the same interest in what he's doing there. And there was a real drift there for a while. And, you know, this is actually the thing that Brendan Rodgers complained about. Like, Rodgers last year was complaining about these players, they've lost their hunger. Oh, some of them, you know, that's why they're not top players. They can't sustain it. You know, this is what he said about his own players. I mean, it was literally like what Roy Keane said about Ireland players. That's why they're at the clubs they're at. You know? But Keane was, at that time, what, the Ipswich manager, right? He did have a couple of Irish players, actually, at Ipswich. But it wasn't as though he was the manager of the Irish team, which included the players he was slamming. Whereas Brendan Rodgers was that man. He was in charge of the players who he was saying were, you know, couldn't do it anymore. And... That was when they got knocked out of the cup last season by Nottingham Forest, who obviously have stayed in the Premier League and are a better team than Leicester now, it turns out. They beat them 4-1 that day when it was a big shock, when they were still in the Championship. And Rodgers said, everyone here, you know, he blasted all the players and said they, you know, they weren't, and a lot of these guys aren't going to be here next season. Next season, they're all there. Everyone's still there, right? It turns out Rodgers is just a bullshitter. You know, he's a guy who says one thing and then that thing doesn't happen and he sort of moves on as though, you know, let's just forget I said that. Well, people don't forget that. You know, when you're saying that these people aren't, well, you're blaming certainly the players.
I assume in that case, though, Rodgers expected that there would be changes. In fact, he's made it pretty clear during the last close season that he expected more backing from the board. This was the common theme during the summer.
Well, there was a change that he certainly had it within his own power to make, Owen, but it might have been a bit more expensive, the change that he was prepared to take on. That is, if he felt that they couldn't do, that they hadn't given him the conditions that he needed to do the job,
he walked away.
Then he could have done that. You know, he could have done that, but I guess he was getting paid a really high salary. Remember, he was on like $8 million a year because Arsenal had tried to. There had been talk at one point that he might be the when Emery got the sack. I think it might have been, but there was talk about, you know, an Arsenal interest in Brendan Rodgers. So Leicester gave him a big new contract, and you know he said all this stuff. It caused, I think, a lot of a breakdown in the relations with a lot of these players because they're like, sorry, who are you exactly to talk about us like that, you know? Like, I mean, what is it about you that's so great that you can stand there after we've lost 4-1 and blame us and say it was all, what, you know? It's a sort of a natural thing for people who are being criticised to point the finger back and say, whoa, what are you and all? But he, as a manager, should have then followed up what he was saying by getting rid of some of these guys he said were no good. He didn't do that. Nor did he get rid of himself. Nor did he say, look, you know, the fact is, this is what I want to happen. It hasn't happened. Instead, there was lots of stories about, oh, Brendan Rodgers is none too plussed about the fact that, you know, the board haven't done anything, you know. But nonetheless, he's none too plussed about it.
Top class.
But he will, however, continue cashing his check at the end of every month. Mm. So, you know, I think that was drifting.
But you can't bomb the players out until you know that players are coming in. And yeah. He wasn't given it was in that sense.
It was a really dumb move. I think he kind of lost credibility, but he nevertheless loyally stayed in the job until such point as they got rid of him when it was already too late because they were already getting sinking into relegation. And, you know, maybe they could have, if they acted earlier, they might have been able to turn it around. You know, I don't think Dean Smith wasn't really a inspired choice, like let's get Dean Smith and John Terry in, you know. I mean, it's a bit like Robbie Keane at least, you know, let's get in a UEFA legend. Is John Terry a UEFA legend or just someone who appears with Robbie Keane on Instagram?
I don't think are John they in Terry's each other's Instagrams. Sorry, no, the only one, I don't follow Robbie Keane on Instagram, but I just put Keane and Luis Figo and
Figo, Shevchenko,
and someone else. Is that Cannavaro? Is it no?
Maybe he's in that. He's in that zone.
Yeah.
But look, you know, these legends, these lines. But then it's not, I mean, I'm blaming Rodgers, or I'm putting most of the blame on Rodgers, but also you've got to look at like James Maddison as well. Like Maddison, who will walk away from this, presumably to, you know, Newcastle is the club that's talked about a lot, but someone will buy Maddison. I mean, he's had an okay season, I guess, like in terms of his goals and assists, and you know, if you disregard the missed penalties, I mean, he missed the penalty against Everton, which has relegated them, I suppose.
So 10 goals and 9 assists in a Premier League team that was relegated. I don't know if you can be pinning this one on poor old James Maddison.
Yeah, well, he scored one goal since February, I think, Owen, and he had the chance from the penalty spot.
Might have got tired of carrying the team on his back for the first 2/3 of the season.
Maybe he made the World Cup squad and just decided to take a little holiday for himself.
Well, he also had that exchange with the Athletic journalist, which was really, really dumb. You know, I felt when I saw the tweet that he really, it's a pity that he didn't read Prince Harry's autobiography, Spare. Because Prince Harry...
As you did, of course.
I didn't read the whole thing, but I did read about 2/3 of it, and it was a good read. But not good enough to finish. You know, I got distracted. But
I love to read good books. Once I get through the way through,
yeah. Once I get through 2/3 of a book, I'm generally finishing it at that point.
I got the picture though. If you know what I mean, I got the picture. I was like, oh, all right, okay, I see what's going on. Fair enough. And I felt like the rest of it would be probably quite similar to what I'd already read. But because there are a few episodes in it where Prince Harry, he's always having terrible stuff written about him in the papers. Mm. He gets on the blower to his da, who is now King Charles, but at the time was only still Prince Charles. And he says, Father, this is terrible what's happening. Have you seen what they've written about me? Or about Meghan, his now wife. And Prince Charles's answer is always the same. He says, darling boy, don't read it. And he says, sadly, this is just the way things are. Mm. And Prince Harry doesn't like that. He says, no, you know, this is not good enough. I can't just say, that's just the way it is. Don't read it. Ignore it. I can't ignore it. This is nonsense. But besides, you're always trying to actually manipulate the media. You know, you claim to be unaffected by it, but in fact, it completely reels your heart. This is, I mean, if you read the book, you'll get much more of that.
Yeah, okay.
But I think the basic point as a policy for somebody who's in that position, who's going to, you know, be talked about much to their annoyance by other people by virtue of their position, maybe you just have to kind of let it go. You know, it's kind of one of those things you can't really. Madison.
Well, that's a different type of advice, though. You're not saying don't read it. You are saying let it go.
Don't read it and let it go are similar types of. I mean, it's basically.
Well, let it go. I mean, if you don't read it, you don't have to let it go because you haven't seen it.
You know, somehow it seems as though people pick these things up by osmosis, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, it seems hard to...
Also, let's face it, don't read it is completely impossible. So. Whereas let it go is hard, but not impossible.
But definitely don't react. Don't react in a public way. Okay, if you can get your little, you know, you've got some people in the background who can get on the phone, some people do a bit of horse trading, you know, tell a couple of little off-the-record stories in exchange for other stories. This is all, it's all part of the game. But definitely don't come out and with a public reaction because that's just going to make it worse.
Why, then what was this? I don't know anything about this
Madison
issue that he had with
the athletic reporter.
Well, it was Rob Tanner who is covering Leicester for The Athletic, and his tweet was back in March. So they lost to Southampton 1-0. Bad game to lose. You know, if you're trying not to get relegated, they're the bottom team. You've just lost to Southampton. Pretty bad. And Rob Tanner's piece was headlined, "This Leicester side buckle under the slightest pressure and it could spell doom." And it went into like what a... bad performance it had been.
So it was one of those detailed athletic type pieces.
Yeah, you know, I mean, and they've lost Southampton. This is bad. You know, and I suppose the photo on it was Madison, who I guess is the star player of the team. I'm not sure Madison was particularly at fault for the game, for this particular defeat. But Madison replies to him or quote tweets him and he says, "Rubbish. Watch and analyze the game properly and stop writing headlines like that." Not sure Rob Tanner did write the headline. "Stop writing headlines like that, which you know makes fans pile on with negativity. Play like that and we'll be absolutely fine. Created numerous brilliant chances. Win comfortably on another day." So it's just like, what are you...
Come on. It's a polite enough rebuttal of an article.
How is
you
it
just lost to one of the worst teams in Premier
How
League.
Is it polite when he says it's rubbish, suggests that he's writing the headlines to try and make people pile on, try and make fans pile on. Which is like, I mean, it's an attack on both his, it's an attack on his ability to understand the game, his ability to do his job, and also on his integrity, because it's suggesting that this is like a malicious attack, as opposed to a completely reasonable...
I think if Leicester had gone on and survived or had a good season, you could as easily be sitting here going, oh, it's great that he engaged with the criticism like that and that he fought his corner and
me
so
granny
on.
Had balls, you'd be me granddad on.
Yeah, I mean...
I just think James Madison is a hilarious fall guy for this, but by a mile... Well, Harvey Barnes was okay as well, but by a mile, Leicester's best player and most productive player, and he's the one who's getting hung out to dry on this podcast.
Well...
Not sure why I feel so passionately about James Madison. Never realised I did. I'm just going to miss his post-match interviews.
See, again, on post-match interviews... I was concerned about James Madison.
You won't miss his post-match interview. He'll be doing those interviews. Yeah. He'll be giving like those open, honest interviews.
Yeah, yeah.
That you lap up.
With Newcastle.
Yeah, exactly. It's called managing the game.
He'll be on high performance.
Yeah, it's called managing the game, Jeff. You know?
Performance.
He will do 100 minutes plus.
When your team gets relegated, do you not automatically get disbarred for a season from an appearance on the High Performance Podcast?
Which team are you talking about?
Yeah, yeah. To be fair, I think Fabian's picked up a knock there. That's why he was down for 7 minutes. I can hear James Maddison being unflinchingly honest in the way that impresses you so much, Owen, for Newcastle next year. Absolutely, for sure. Joe Linton's a good lad, but he has picked up a knock there. He did need a bit of treatment. That sort of thing. Thanks so much, James. Really appreciate the honesty. Jamie Carragher and Gary Neville on Monday Night Football.
Yeah.
Newcastle 1, Brentford 0.
Okay, continue with your Maddison hit job then.
All I'm saying, Owen, is that, you know, it's literally, I mean, what's Jamie Vardy? Does Vardy have a tattooed on him? I mean, Jamie Vardy did give the world one deathless phrase, which will always be associated with, well, there was a couple actually of phrases that will always be associated with, but the
one that he said,
the more positive one,
chat shit, get banged.
All I'm saying is maybe he doesn't even need to go to Prince Harry. Maybe he could just turn to Jamie Vardy and ask him, do you think I should, you know, Rob Tanner's written a piece which sort of annoys me, you know, do you think I should come back and
chat shit about that? Or?
So, yeah, it's, I mean, also the goalkeeper, I mean, I should have mentioned him, really. I mean, this was Schmeichel. You've seen Kasper Schmeichel. You know what kind of person he is. Would you describe him as a confident person?
Oh, yeah.
Would you describe him as someone who speaks his mind on issues as they arise?
Yes.
Absolutely.
Is he the kind of person necessarily Brendan Rodgers wanted to have around? Well, not enough to offer him a contract on the level of what he was being offered by Jim Ratcliffe's boys at Nice. So they let him go. They were like, oh, see you, Casper. And he was, you know, a really good player for them. Maybe he was a little past the base. He's only 35. I mean, you've seen goalkeepers go on longer than that. Maybe they had to start thinking about replacing him at some point, but instead they just let him go and didn't replace him, or just put in Danny Ward and said, yeah, that'll do. I mean, it didn't. It wasn't good enough, you know? And he left Danny Ward there until March, letting in a lot of goals. So I think it was a real sense of, yeah, we'll be fine, right up until the end when they were not fine. I mean, as for Leeds, poor old Leeds, you know, didn't really have a chance. They kind of sank in minute one when Harry Kane scored. I mean, Harry Kane has had a pretty amazing season.
Unbelievable.
Lucas Moura then scored probably the goal of the season. I didn't think the goal of the season was very good. If you saw the actual competition, it was kind of like, yeah.
Well, I thought it was Almiron's goal, which didn't even get into the top three. The volley with the instep, I thought was very good.
Yeah,
the one that ended up getting it was in Ciso's goal against
Man City,
which I'm not even sure was his best goal.
Do you think the Chelsea one was better?
Potentially, yeah.
Two similar type.
You like to see
shots.
Something more unusual. That's why I thought the Almiron one might get it. I don't know about the Moura one. I think the defending was a disgrace for him. Yeah. Like, honestly, lads, somebody put in a tackle is what I'd be saying there if I was Big Sam. Yeah. Probably did say it.
I think he probably did.
Yeah. He just waltzes through as everyone backs off. And
I'm surprised you didn't mention the fact that they played the Lightning Seeds, Life of Riley, as the goal of the season backing music as part of your opening salvo of, you know, retro
end of
the Premier League season. Yep. Listen, Owen, I wouldn't tell you how to do your job.
Well, you just have.
Well, we can all get better. This is a high performance environment, Doug. You should get used to frag feedback.
Harry Kane,
maybe we'll improve.
Harry Kane, 30 goals in a season.
Unbelievable.
The rest of his teammates are falling apart is pretty impressive. I think he would be a good signing for Man United. I know you're not sure about this, his age, lack of sell-on value, all those things. I think you might get three or four. Bearing in mind, this is the three or four very good years. And bearing in mind, this was the season where he destroyed his entire life's work by missing the penalty for England in the middle of it.
Yeah.
And then came back and just continued to rack up the goals for Spurs.
Listen, the Kane regency before Evan Ferguson assumes the crown.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's the sort of succession plan that Man United fans can really get on board with.
We'll get Kane in, then we'll get Big Ev in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, he has had a phenomenal season and he's just kept going. You know, when you might have expected him to be flagging a little bit, because he obviously has played a lot. He scored 14 goals in the last 14 games. He scored in 12 of those games. In fact, I saw that he had, was it equal or broken Andy Cole's record from, I think, 93, 94, of scoring in 26 different matches. This was the most anyone had managed to do. Mm-hmm. Andy Cole, I think, was in a 42-game season. So it is phenomenal. It also, though, that run might have been his worst run as a Tottenham player. Like, just in terms of what was happening in Tottenham, the six wins, five defeats, three draws, fell out of contention for everything they were playing for. Manager got sacked. You know, I mean, it was terrible, and he's like playing as well as he's ever played. So I don't know what to do or what he would feel like doing at this point. I mean, I suppose if Manchester United want to sign him this summer, then that's an obvious thing for him to to go for at this point, right? And it's an obvious thing for Tottenham. I mean, you could see, for instance, David Ornstein saying, Daniel Levy reluctant to sell Harry Kane, even at 100 million, as he knows how difficult it would be to replace him. And even though he can go for free next summer, he'll need more. And you're like, 100 million is a great price.
I know, but I can see where that logic comes from. We know what Levy's like. It's almost a personal affront to him to sell a player for what he believes to be below the maximum amount of money they can get for him.
Yeah, but like,
he's made it hard for Kane in the past. He might make it hard again, which will then leave him in a position where you've got an entire season of Kane just winding down his contract while still scoring 30 goals. Unmotivated Harry Kane still scoring 28 to 30 goals probably next
year. I mean, from Man United's point of view, I don't think it's ideal because of the composition of the team already having quite a few players who are, you know, 30 in and around. But Kane could be like Lewandowski, you know? I mean, would it have been worth signing a 30-year-old Robert Lewandowski? Absolutely. I mean, no question. He's worth another 250, 300, maybe more than that. I'm not sure exactly the numbers, but he was scoring 50. That's when he's hit the 50-goal-a-season phase of his career. It's a good phase. Even as a guy is 31 and 30, it's still good, you know? The other thing about Lewandowski, though, is that he very seldom got injured, whereas Harry Kane has had a few injuries, so maybe it's a bit more risky. But when you look at, like, you know, what they've had this season, Weghorst again can't even score the very end when everyone is going, go on, just stick it in, and he misses. That was just amazing.
What was the Vout stat that you
Rich Jolly's Vout stat? Goals by Vouts in the Premier League: Liverpool 2, Vout Fast 2 own goals. Leicester 1, Vout Fast, he scored, of course, the other day. Manchester United
no goals for any Vouts whatsoever.
Premier League goals, of course, because Vout did score in the League Cup, right? He scored a little. Was it a rebound? Maybe it was Europa. Yeah. But like, okay, Harry Kane would be a considerable improvement on Wout Weghorst. Maybe he would be stepping on Bruno Fernandes' toes a little bit in terms of he likes to play in the same type of areas. But, you know, I'm sure they could probably figure it out. But of course, this season isn't over yet for Manchester United. We saw Erik ten Hag remind everyone of that in his flamboyant speech on the Old Trafford pitch. I think David De Gea, Golden Glove, he for most clean sheets in the Premier League. He received
what a season he had.
He received that award, and Erik ten Hag took the mic and said, among other things, this stuff.
So I want to thank you for the season, for the contribution, for the backing us, for the support. And it was great, and so thank you. But when I say these words, there's still one game to go. So, and I'm sure that these players will give everything to beat Manchester City next week.
Palm of his hand.
Oh, amazing stuff. This speech prompted this article from Stephen Railson at the Manchester Evening News. Erik ten Hag did what Ole Gunnar Solskjaer could not with a rousing speech to Manchester United fans, is the headline. You could probably hear Manchester United fans roaring to Erik ten Hag's speech at Old Trafford from Dean's Gate at the weekend. The rousing, passionate address of two supporters, sent reverberations around the sun-kissed stadium, and it was evidence of the special connection between the fans and club that has been gradually rebuilt on the back of it being shattered. First of all, I want to say thank you to players, blah, 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 blah. So, great, stirring speech, sun-kissed stadium, everyone happy, we're going to get Man City. The speech at Old Trafford was stirring, and it gave a glimpse into what the future might look like with Ten Hag in charge. The club last won the Premier League in 2012-13. Supporters are now hoping to see a credible title challenge. The 53-year-old, composed with the microphone, struck every right note with his speech. What did you think of his speech, Murph? You must have been fairly...
Thanks for just giving me a minute there to recover my composure.
It got you going, didn't it?
It did, of course it did.
Yeah,
I mean,
we're going to do them, lads. We'll do them for you today.
That was basically Mick Byrne. I was literally going to say that. It's like, that is what it was. We'll do them for you next week. And everyone was like, I don't think so, but cheers, Eric. Go get him.
Sir Alex Ferguson would give speeches at the end of most seasons. Ryan Giggs delivered a great speech as interim coach. Louis van Gaal did it twice and was succinct. While Jose Mourinho never did any during his 2.5 year tenure. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer picked up the baton that Mourinho didn't want. But he was restricted to just one address as the 2018-19 season ended with a home defeat against Cardiff and 2019-20 finished behind closed doors due to the pandemic. So he didn't do it in 2019 because they'd lost to Cardiff, is that?
Sounds like it.
Okay. Solskjaer finally got the chance to thank fans for their continued support on the final day of the 2021 campaign, when just 10,000 were led back into Old Trafford to watch a draw against Fulham, which preceded the Europa League final. Talks about Solskjaer's speech. Solskjaer's tone of voice during his speech was not as authoritative as his successors, and the Europa League final was subsequently lost on penalties.
Correlation does not equal causation, my man.
The wider point is that Solskjaer was not the manager to lead the club to silverware, and supporters inside Old Trafford reacted to his speech almost as if they suspected that. It wasn't as confident as the speech made on Sunday, when Ten Hag pointed the crosshairs at Manchester City in his speech.
Pointed.
We're going to go down there. We're going to fulfill that fixture. We're going to play the hell out of all 90 of those minutes. Plus extra time, but honestly, we're not all that hopeful. We're going to get there, but nevertheless, we're going to be there.
Ten Hag pointed the crosshairs at Manchester City in his speech. Those in attendance believed and hung off his every word. He is the most universally liked manager of the club since Ferguson, and that status has been earned this season. So, mentions Ten Hag has spent north of $200 million, but the extent of the Messi inheritance should not be forgotten. When I heard about Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's lack of confidence, which cost him ultimately the Europa League final, I thought, really, I mean, let's, shall we listen to
Ole?
I mean,
we're all thinking the same thing.
The other thing you might want to keep in mind, there's only 10,000 people there, and it's a socially distanced crowd, right?
Yeah.
It's not even 10,000 people in one block. It's just spread, dispersed all around Old Trafford.
Tough crowd.
As Ole Gunnar Solskjaer comes out and takes the mic.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's fantastic to have you back in. It's so great to have you back in supporting the team. See you back here supporting everyone. It's been great working with these boys. They're a great group of lads, players, the staff. I know we're not where we are, we want to be in the league, but hopefully we can bring a trophy back in about 10 days time. So we'll do whatever we can, and hopefully next year we can see everyone on the seats again. So all the best, support the team, and a safe trip back home.
What do you think, Murph? Did you feel the energy draining out of you?
No. I mean, it's not Roman Roy.
You feel emasculated?
I would say slightly worse than Eric Ten Hag.
Content-wise, is it even that different?
No.
It's A, delivery, and B, context.
Yeah.
It's the fans being
it's
there.
It's the fans. The crowd makes the difference.
Up,
like,
course,
the thing that makes Ten Hag's speech good is the way the crowd is like...
And let's face it, Ken, good is a stretch.
Well, I mean, but funny at least, you know? Yeah, we're going to do them, lads. Whereas, you know, poor Ollie in that situation.
I mean, you got to feed off the crowd in a situation. In, you know, when it comes to public speaking, a lot of it is... You know, you send out, what do you get back?
Yeah.
You know, and does that propel you into the next sentence?
I think he made one mistake, though, Solskjaer. Mm-hmm. He used the word hopefully twice.
Yeah.
You don't want to use that word. Never, ever say hopefully if you're a football manager. David Moyes likes to do it. And I always want to take him aside and say, stop saying that word. Mm. And it's just not a good word to use. Hopefully, you know, you have to be... You have to say, we're going to go down and do them. You know?
More definitively.
And say, hopefully we'll do them. Yeah.
Hopefully you're right.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
I care not one jot about his supreme talent. He launched himself 6 feet into the crowd and kung fu kicked a supporter.
High drama on the final day of the Bundesliga season for the Athletics. Rafael Honigstein to get into. Great to chat to you, Rafi.
Hello.
On a scale of 1 to 10, how surprised were you that Dortmund found a way to throw this thing away?
9.5.
Really?
I really didn't think that they would do that. Mainz had come there on the back of 4 defeats. Nothing to play for. Dortmund really strong at home this season. In great form, scoring lots of goals. But there was something in the way that things developed, both in Cologne, where Bayern were playing, and Dortmund, which in combination created a very sort of negative flow and pressure, which ultimately saw them buckle. As you said, they did kind of throw it away.
I mean, the how of it is difficult to explain, but I mean, what about the why? Why did Mainz do this?
Mainz behaved as you'd want any team to behave who got nothing to play for. They played good football. The same was true of Köln, of course. I mean, Köln very nearly got a draw against Bayern. And as a Bayern supporter, you could have asked them, you know, why are they doing this to us? So, no, I think it had very little to do with what they did and everything with Dortmund somehow not being able to deal with the pressures of the situation, especially after Bayern took a lead after only 8 minutes. It then, I think, brought the magnitude of the challenge home. They did gone into the game thinking, okay, yes, if we win, it's going to be fine. We might not even have to win. A draw might be enough if Bayern don't win. It felt as if Dortmund only really became aware sort of the magnitude once things went against them, suddenly being under pressure to score 2 goals when Bayern scored, being under pressure to score 2 goals once Bayern scored, then being 1-0 down, then being 2-0 down before that missing a penalty. So everything sort of conspired against them in that first 25, 30 minutes. And while they recovered and actually played pretty well in the second half and, of course, got an equalizer very late on, it's that first half where they really messed things up. But just to put it in perspective very briefly, I think as much as they are hurting, and this is seen as a historic chance missed, and rightly so, there is now, I think, in the cold light of day, also realization that 73 points shouldn't really be enough to win the Bundesliga in the first place. And irrespective of what Bayern did or didn't do, it's their very poor first half of the season where they only picked up 25 points from the first 15 games that ultimately saw them fail. If you want to win the Bundesliga, even against a poor Bayern team, you have to reach somewhere in the 80s. You can't really expect to win with 73 points.
Yeah, I'm interested how you feel what was going on in the Bayern game impacted so much on the Borussia Dortmund players, which I guess is natural. I mean, it is probably what's going to happen. But surely they're starting the day thinking, we only have to win our game. And we've got to assume Bayern will win because even though it's been a patchy season, they're probably going to find a way to dig it out.
Yeah, but as a coach said to me the other day, the problem with the little magnets you push around on the tactics boards, they don't sweat. Mm-hmm. So I think the point is that, yes, you can prepare yourself for that pressure. You can tell yourself that story that, you know, Bayern will probably win. Once you're on the pitch, once things don't quite go for you, and then you miss a penalty for the equalizer, which really was maybe the final point that got them on sort of on the wrong journey, if you will.
It was still only after like 15 minutes or something, though.
Yeah, yeah.
So much time still to turn the game around.
I know, but I don't like this phraseology, and I think it's very often used in a very lazy manner. But in this specific case, they really did choke in the first half. They froze. They became very hectic. They didn't play their football. They didn't do all the things they did well. Mainz, it has to be said, really played one of their best away games of the season, made it very difficult for them. They sat really deep. All the things that Dortmund have done so well in recent weeks, which is to generate depth through the flanks with Adeyemi and Marlon combining with Haller leading the line, that those threats were nullified with Mainz sitting with two rows of four almost inside their own box. And Dortmund ended up putting a lot of crosses, a lot of them poor crosses. And only in the second half when
Terzic.
Edin Terzic made some substitutions, did they regain some kind of semblance of control. But by then it was kind of lost.
One thing that struck me about, I mean, obviously the end of it was just this kind of stunning scene. You know, it felt like nobody kind of knew what to say about that or how to sort of process what they'd just seen. But what was notable was the apparently complete absence of any rancor from the atmosphere, which was a huge contrast. But say, for instance, if you looked at Leeds yesterday. Leeds got relegated. They knew they were getting relegated all day. They conceded a goal in the first minute. You know, everyone sort of knew. And yet, at the full-time whistle, there was this huge anger from the crowd. They're screaming, you know, you're not fit to wear this shirt. Some of them are fighting the police and so on. Meanwhile, at Dortmund, who have missed a chance, like such a chance. And it's 11 years in a row of this now.
They did come second rather than second last.
11 years in a row. And they had it all. They had it in their hands and they threw it away. And this crowd is just warmly applauding that.
It was more than warmly applauding. They were singing the club anthem in front of Edin Terzic, who was tearing up. I think they have very sensitive sort of antennas in Dortmund and they understand a couple of things. First of all, this team isn't probably not quite good enough to win the title, and it would have been a huge surprise and probably a freak event if they'd won it. So not winning it cannot really be held against them the way that maybe it would have been different in the mid-90s or in the early 2000s when they had sort of superstar players and really went into every season thinking they can win the title as Bayern's equals. We're not at that point. But also, I think they could understand how much it hurt the players, how they were distraught, how Terzic, a former Dortmund ultra from the yellow wall, turned head coach, was suffering, not for himself, but for not being able to deliver for the club, for the fans. And somebody who feels so bad, who feels bad about letting everyone down, you don't, I think, then turn towards anger and hate. I think it's more when there's an accusation or suspicion that somebody quite hasn't understood the magnitude of their lack of success or what it means to others when you get angry. here you could see so clearly that they all understood what it meant for everyone and that they felt so sorry and so awful about it. So the last I would have expected from this Dortmund faithful is to turn on their own.
What about Bayern? they won the 11th title in a row. Maybe this one is a little bit by default, not the greatest title. Almost immediately after, there's the news that they've sacked Oliver Kahn, the CEO, and Hasan Salihamidzic, the sporting director. Now, the decision had been taken the previous day. They'd been effectively sacked on Friday. Kahn obviously wasn't at the game. Let's get into what that decision was about. But first of all, do you think they jumped the gun a little bit? Did they sack them in the expectation that the season was going to end in failure as opposed to the kind of, I suppose, official success that it actually is?
Not really, because it wasn't seen as a success. It was just seen as the bare minimum that's acceptable. And sacking them later might have made it more awkward when you sack them once they've won the title. But with Kahn, things go much deeper than that. It wasn't so much what Bayern did as a team, more to do with how he led the club, how he rubbed a lot of people the wrong way, how Uli Hoeneß, the patron in the background, felt that this was no longer his Bayern, run like a family, with all the dysfunction that entails, admittedly, but run too in a too corporate manner. And this was really just an excuse to pull the trigger on somebody who has been on shaky ground now for the best part of 1.5 years. Salihamidzic was different. I think this has more to do with the power politics behind the scenes, that he was the pawn that needed to be sacrificed for other changes to be made. Christian Dresen, the new CEO, doesn't really like Salihamidzic too much. Karl-Heinz Rummenigge, who's coming back into the supervisory board, doesn't really like Salihamidzic too much. So this has to be seen as Uli Hoeneß, with Rummenigge, but mostly Hoeneß, taking back control. And in order to do that, he needed the support of one or two people who, I think, named Salihamidzic as their prize. So less to do with what happened on the pitch and more to do with internal power wranglings. But ultimately, yet another example how Bayern messed things up. You might support the decision on a rational basis just as much as the decision to fire Julian Nagelsmann might have been the right decision at the time. But the way it was communicated, the way it broke, left Bayern looking fairly amateurish, if not slightly classless. And that's left, I think, a bad taste in the mouth of many supporters.
Yeah, although, it's not a million miles off Uli Hoeneß getting rid of Jupp Heynckes 10 years ago. And the circumstances of that, I don't think, were that nice. But I suppose it's different when someone else does it. You can see how unpleasant these things are. But what is it that...
Yeah, but hold on a second. Jupp Heynckes was out of contract and Bayern went for Guardiola and did a deal 6 months in advance and told Heynckes, look, the next guy's coming in.
Yeah.
I don't think that compares with
getting
firing guys a minute after winning the title.
Yeah, yeah. Although he delivered the treble, I suppose it was a happy ending for Jupp Heynckes at least. But what is it? You said that Oliver Kahn had been on thin ice for 1.5 years. What was he? Can you give us a flavor of what his time as CEO? He's been in the job, I think, since 2020. He replaced Karl-Heinz Rummenigge. But what is how can you characterize that spell that he led the club? I mean, is there anything in particular that he did that he will be kind of remembered for, or was there anything that he did that was different from what had been done before? And what was it that he did that ultimately his colleagues decided wasn't good enough? I mean, leaving aside the obvious sort of flashpoint, let's say the recent flashpoint of the Nagelsmann thing and all that, what had been...
It had nothing to do with Nagelsmann. Nagelsmann's dismissal was supported by everyone, including Uli Hoeneß and all these people. So it had nothing to do with that at all. This is more with his way of leading the club. I'll give you one example. When he came in, he installed this task force called FC Bayern ahead in capital letters. Very sort of McKinsey corporate, getting in lots of people with kind of business backgrounds to look at all aspects of the club and see how they can be perfected. And you might say that is a sensible thing to do for a new CEO. The problem is you have to do it in a sensitive way. And for, most importantly, perhaps not give people the impression that everything they have done for the last 30 years or so is wrong and now needs to be changed for the better of the club. He did a question and answer session with the whole club where they're supposed to come out with stuff that they didn't like or felt it had gone wrong. But Karl-Heinz Rummenigge, the chief executive, was actually still there sitting next to him. So you can imagine how the people felt, you know, should I say, yeah, actually Rummenigge has been really wrong for 10 years. Finally, I can speak up, but he's still sitting there. Mm. So just a very, very not so clever moves, I would say. And also, I think as a former goalkeeper, perhaps not really that much of a team player. If he'd been, I think, more cooperative, more willing to listen, closer to the team, closer to the people behind him, like Uli Hoeneß, then we might have seen a different outcome. But he very clearly wanted to do things his way without really involving these guys around him. And ultimately, I think that understandable move to emancipate himself from the previous regime was done in a very clumsy, sort of headstrong manner, and made that his power base eroded very quickly.
What would this McKinsey business analytics consulting have had to say about the idea that Bayern was actually still being run by a wealthy granddad in a villa overlooking a beautiful lake in the mountains to the south of the city, who apparently doesn't really have an official role, but according to your piece today, is in fact still running the club?
Yeah, he is in the supervisory board, and he is running the club to a large extent. We see this now that he's still running the club, because basically this is the old regime taking back the power. But I need to reiterate, if Kahn had involved Hoeneß more, then I think Hoeneß wouldn't have been able to make that dramatic a move. It was because Kahn basically shunted Hoeneß aside and did a lot of things by himself that the supervisory board was actually able to say, you know what, this is not the way that we think FC Bayern should be run. And there were mistakes being made when it comes to the way you deal with people. And ultimately, I think while they were right to disregard Hoeneß in one or two aspects, for example, he wanted Lewandowski to stay, even if it meant him losing for free the next season. They ignored his advice, but it did it in a very sort of public, in a very ostentatious way. And I think that wasn't very smart. You can say, well, we have to run the show now and we think differently, but to basically just try to ignore him and say, let this old guy speak, you know, we don't care anymore. That was the crucial mistake. And now that there was a sense that the club is also in a sporting way, not really going in the right direction, that's when it was easy in a way to put the knife in, because before that, these are things that are sort of esoteric and nobody really talks about it outside a small group of people. But now that the public opinion moved against Kahn and Salihamidžić, that's when the supervisory board thought, okay, fine. We never quite believed in him anyway. Let's just do it now.
I see Dietmar Hamann reportedly said on German TV, when you treat people like this, you have to ask yourself, do you want to work for this club? I don't think you can rule out Tuchel leaving soon too, but he'll leave of his own accord. Do you think that's likely to happen with Thomas Tuchel?
Not at all. I think Didi Hamann got a lot of things right on Saturday, but he completely misread the mood of what Tuchel said. Tuchel was going out of his way to say that he was now not even going on holiday because he wanted to take responsibility and felt that a lot of things needed to be done at the moment. And he is the last man standing as far as sort of sporting leadership is concerned, because the new CEO is a former finance director. So he's not a former player. He's not a sports personality. There's no sporting director at the moment. And it is a key transfer window. So Tuchel will, at least in the short run, actually have a lot more power than recent managers. and he might not relish the power that much.
No, it sounds a bit like last summer at Chelsea when he was being told.
Yeah,
to.
I think that was different though, because last year at Chelsea he had to have, from what I was told, 3 meetings a day with 3 different owners, and each one wanted to discuss their own 3 or 4 targets with him. So he just basically became completely exhausted and just didn't want to know anymore. This will be much more, I think, targeted and a much shorter and more precise process, if you will. But I think he will be able to shape the team. He will say, I want this guy, I want that guy, I want these people out. And they will listen more so than they would have done in different situations. Also, yes, you can say his results weren't that impressive, but he did win the title, and he won it by doing something quite ruthless and quite brutal and by quite smart, ultimately, as it worked out. He first substituted Thomas Müller, which is always a very political situation if it backfires, but it worked. But more importantly, he brought on Leon Goretzka, German international, took him off again after 30 minutes to bring on Jamal Musiala, who scores the winner. So again, you know, Julian Nagelsmann, I'm not sure he would have had the balls to do that. Tuchel didn't care. He was rewarded for that. And I think that also strengthens his position. He's going to be the key figure for Bayern this summer. So absolutely no chance he will leave.
Who do you think is going to leave then? Because obviously Bayern have got an absolute diamond in Musiala, who scored the crucial goal. And maybe he is going to be the star of the team, you know, the next huge star of that team. But they thought Sadio Mane was going to be a star. It hasn't worked out that way. He was an unused substitute. You know, they made 5 and none of them was Sadio. Can you explain why this has failed so badly? And do you see any way back for him at this point? I mean, this is a guy who was brilliant consistently in the Premier League and Champions League for, you know, all the years. This is why Bayern signed him. And it just hasn't happened for him. Do you think they're definitely going to be getting rid of him, or is there still hope?
Well, as we've seen with Erling Haaland and his goals for City as compared to his Dortmund output, the Bundesliga is a higher standard and it is harder for attacking players to succeed there, as Sadio Mane has learned as well. No, but joking aside, he's been a huge disappointment. He's been a huge disappointment, and he'd be first on the list of players that Bayern want to move on, because his impact has been the opposite of what Bayern had hoped for. They thought his consistency, his mentality is going to raise everybody's game and make the Gnabrys and Sanés and Musiala strive and harder. But actually, he sort of almost dragged them down. And there's been a lot of surprise about his attitude and training, which hasn't been very good, and his general sort of lack of effort and intensity. And if we want to know one thing from Thomas Tuchel, especially going back to his time at Chelsea, if he feels somebody is a bad trainer and doesn't have the right body language and doesn't lead by example, these players very rarely ever come back. So if Bayern find a taker for Mane, I'd expect him to be the very first name out of the door.
Can I just ask one last one, Rafi, on just the makeup of the German teams actually going to the Champions League? Obviously, it's Bayern, it's Dortmund, it's Leipzig, I guess. And there is one pretty surprising name in there is Union Berlin. I mean, can you put in perspective what it means for this club, who only got promoted a couple of seasons ago, to have made it into this competition?
This is a club that was basically bankrupt a couple of times in the 90s and early 2000s, who survived through the help of their own fans who rebuilt the stadium, who collected money by donating blood, all these stories that you're familiar with. But then to win promotion to the Bundesliga for the first time, stay up, then qualify for the Conference League in the next season, then qualify for the Europa League in their third season, and now qualify for the Champions League in their fourth season. That is a kind of sustained success with relatively little money that is just unbelievable. In a way, it's a German fairy tale as well, because they didn't grow by virtue of having a rich uncle from America or Abu Dhabi coming in and saying, I always wanted to build Union Berlin into a lovely sports washing machine. No, they've done it all because they've just been a little bit smarter, a little bit harder working, having a tremendous support, fantastic atmosphere, fantastic coach. And here they are in the Champions League. It's really an incredible story, and you can't praise Urs Fischer, the manager, and all the players and the board highly enough for what they've achieved.
Brilliant. Raphael Hallenstein, always good to talk. Thank you.
Thanks.
I'm having a buzz floundering around. If anyone wants to knock, give me a shout.
6 million ways to die. Choose one.
I don't like the name in because, you know, I actually think he's a very good writer. But it was that. This was a dig at football people who know the game. Using statistics to try and undermine people who have eyes, ears and common sense.
What I'm saying is that sometimes the eyes and ears mislead you. The ears, particularly if it's Paul Merson talking to him, might mislead you.
This was a dig at football people who know the game.
You know the balls, you know the stones.
Have a proper debate. I'd love to debate him. You could sell tickets for that.
All I have to back it up are facts. All I have to back it up is the factual record of what took place.
Bring it on. This was a dig at football people who know the game. He's the one who's on the attack, don't forget. And has been for some time without naming people. He mentioned pundits. Well, who are the football pundits?
I think they call that on a verbal broadside.
You've been on the attack, Ken, but you just don't have what it takes to name names.
You don't have the balls, Ken. You know the stones.
Don't have the balls.
Yeah, I don't want to put them down. But they seem to want to prove that you don't need to know anything about football to write about it. This was a dig at football people who know the game.
You don't have the balls, Ken. You know the stones.
No mention of Liverpool's 4-4 draw on the final day of the season, Ken? Trent Alexander-Arnold, has it given you any further pause?
I can't watch every... Well, first of all, I didn't watch the game because it was not on, was it? I mean, it wasn't on.
Nothing was happening.
I saw the goals and so on. I mean, Southampton scored a couple of nice goals. Liverpool scored a couple of nice goals. Nobody really cared.
Real end of season fair.
Yeah.
You were too busy watching Brentford try to qualify for Europe on Premier Sports.
Brentford against City.
Did the league double over Manchester City?
Yeah, we'll try and beat them next year, said Guardiola.
Hopefully.
No, he didn't say that.
We'll hopefully try and beat Brentford next season.
Okay, well, that's all for next season. That's it for this Premier League season. Thanks, Murph.
Oh, and there's so much more football still to be played, well, though. I mean, it feels like it's wrong to even try and put it. A full stop
FA Cup, Champions League, the World Cup in the summer.
It just never ends.
Hopefully do a few teams over there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll do them for you today. This summer.
Thanks, Murph.
Thank you, Owen. And thank you very much, Ken.
Thank you, Owen. And thank you, Kieran.
Thanks for listening. The Second Cabins Podcast is part of the Acast.
The Acast Creator Network. Sorry, I don't want to talk over you. The Acast
Creator Network. Yeah. Sign up on secondcabins.com to become a member to hear all the episodes with no ads. Thanks for listening.
Whose phone is that? That's the second time it's gone off.
They never go home, those boys.
The second captain's world service.
It is not war and death and famine. It's not that at all. It's the opposite of that. It's the persuasion of the world outside of that. That's why sport's important.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.